Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of Mind Power. This is Donna Sebo, and today we're going to be discussing something that is a favorite of mine, and that is animals. We're going to be talking with Barbara Abercrombie, her wonderful book titled Cherished. Now, what this is involving are 21 writers telling their personal stories about the very, very special critters. That's what I'll use as my term, that have been in their lives and how much they meant to them. Barbara, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Donna. It's a delight to be on it.
Now, you have been a teacher in a writer's program at UCLA in their extension section. You have been involved with writing for so many years of your life. You've written novels. Why do you think this has been such a passion for you?
Writing? That's such a good question, and I don't think I can answer it. I've been writing stories since I was 6 years old.
Oh, my.
And I always thought that's what everybody did. I love reading. I love good books, and I love figuring out my life on the page.
Now, that is a fascinating answer. How is it one figures out their life on a page?
Well, in the case of this book, this anthology, I had lost my horse. My horse had died exactly 2 years ago. And I was really grieving for my horse. And I was feeling awful. And I wrote, and again, because when I have feelings that I can't get out of, I write about them, and I have a blog, so I did a post about my horse and how hard I was grieving and how much I love this horse. And I got a lot of wonderful comments, including a fellow who is also is a veterinarian and my student and a dear friend of mine, and he said there should be a book or an anthology of pieces like I wrote about my horse. And I thought, oh, that's the kind of book I'd like to read right now. And then I did some research and I realized there was no such book. And if there's, you know, writers always think, you know, we write the book that we need to read.
Mm-hmm.
So I contacted a number of my friends who are wonderful writers and have published books and I know love animals. And I said, you know, would this be something you'd be interested in doing, writing an essay for me? And that's how the book came about, Cherished, 21 Writers on Animals They've Loved and Lost. And Donna, it was interesting. I was doing a book reading at a bookstore the other night, and I realized I was with some of the other writers, and I realized that this project started in such pain and grief and depression, really, and it's ended up into being one of the most joyous books I've ever written because of the other authors, and we do readings together, and it's been great fun in the end.
Mm-hmm. Each of the stories has a very profound message to it, and I think that one of the gifts that animals bring us is this awareness that there is such a depth to who they are. It always irritates me no end when they're assigned to a position of like, gee, they're like a rock. They don't have any soul or personality. I've heard people say
right.
this through the years, and I feel like I want to dunk their head in something that's going to clear their brain.
Right.
But it's, and I'm not being very nice, I know, but it's fascinating to me. I cannot look at any living creature, whether it's a hummingbird or a dog, mm-hmm. anything and everything in between, without knowing and feeling and understanding that they have got a very special gift, that they do have this essence of life, and they respond to it. They have trust, they have fear, they have affection. We use words to communicate what we feel to to the best of our capacity, and sometimes it never comes up to snuff. And when you're dealing
right.
with animals, there's so much that's never spoken that's communicated. It's amazing to me. And I feel sad for those people that do not have that kind of empathy.
I do, too. I think times are beginning to finally change, because I remember when I wrote about, one of the essays I wrote, and it's about a cat I had for 19 years, and I had had the cat half my life when the cat died, and there was the attitude of, oh, are you going to get another black cat? And I was really embarrassed at how hard I was grieving for this cat, because the cat had shared so much of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And that this was just, 30 years ago. And, you know, there wasn't the vet didn't send out sympathy cards, or there was no awareness of how much you can grieve for an animal then. It was a replaceable thing I could go out and get again, that people thought. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's changed. I think our culture has changed greatly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I'm just fascinated. I really am intrigued with what people go through and how they relate to things. And there is some material I'm reviewing that I'll be sharing on the latter part of the show that somebody sent me. And I thought, you hear about these inhumane things that go on, and when you pick up a book like yours, Cherished, mm-hmm. that each and every story in here is written by an individual that has shared their space with their special critter. And they really touch your heart.
Yes. Yeah. And they also touch on, my editor at New World Library mentioned this. He said they went even deeper than he thought they would, because they connect to the human condition, too. For instance, one of the writers has an autistic son, Monica Holloway,
mm-hmm.
and the dog, and she writes about how he and the dog interact, and another of the writers was she was going to a Christian school and she was Jewish, and so religion came into her, she wove religion into her essay, and another had a horse living in a trailer park, and that essay was really also about class and expectations. So I was amazed at all the different angles that the writers took, and the writers are really some of my favorite writers, people I know and people I don't know. I emailed Jane Smiley and asked her for an essay, and there's one by Anne Lamott in the book. So the quality of writing is just extraordinary, too, I think. I'm very proud of it.
Well, you should be. All of these people, and you give a write-up on each of these individuals in the back of the book, which
mm-hmm.
I think is wonderful. I would like to read to my listeners something that Ted Kuzner contributed, and it was
yeah.
the 19th. And this really touched my heart and mind. Arthritic and weak, my old dog, Hattie, stumbles behind me over the snow. When I stop, she stops, tipped to one side like a folding table with one of the legs not snapped in place. Head bowed, one ear turned down to the earth as if she could hear it turning, she is losing the trail at the end of her 14th year. Now she must follow. Once she could catch a season running and shake it by the neck until the leaves felt off, but now they get away, flashing their tails as they bound off over the hill. Maybe she doesn't see them out of those clouded, wet brown eyes. Maybe she no longer cares. I thought for a while last summer that I might die before my dogs, but it seems I was wrong. She wobbles a little way ahead of me now, barking her sharp small bark, then stops and trembles, excited, on point, at the spot that leads out of the world. Ted Kuzner. He wrote that so beautifully.
He's one of my favorite poets. That's so interesting, Donna, because I was waiting, for you to talk to you, and I was looking at the book, and I reread that essay, and I thought, oh, the ending of it is so sweet. He's excited. The dog is
mm-hmm.
excited.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think it's an incredible, incredible poem.
I want to talk about the little pig. I think that was the cutest story. It's Red the Pig by Mei Li Chai. And Tell us a little bit about Maylee and tell us about her pig.
Well, I met Maylee when we were both judges for the Penn Contest for Literature in Los Angeles, and we were judging nonfiction. And we were always on the same page. And I thought, boy, I really like this woman. You know, we really agree on stuff. And so, and then I had met her at the Penn Awards. And when I started this book, I said, Maylee, is there any chance you have any animal story for me? And she said, oh my God, yes, my pig. And she grew up in a part of the country where, she was Chinese. Her father was Chinese. And, so her essay, interestingly enough, is also about assimilation and being different in, I think it was North Dakota she grew up in, and then raising this pig, which of course met its end like all, or most pigs do. I did a reading with her in San Francisco a couple of weeks ago, and she had this wonderful big picture of herself in pigtails holding the pig. It was her graduation picture. But and she said that she had never written about that before, and she cried as she wrote it because the whole experience came back to her.
Yeah, and living on a farm, that's something very few people in today's world really have an experience with. Mm-hmm. So often people today have such a sanitized environment of thinking relative to going into the market, buying their meat, whatever it might be, chicken, fish, whatever it is.
Exactly.
And you have all of this, and people so often are so detached, and then they might read a story like hers and go, oh, that would be terrible, I would never want it. But farms are necessary. This is something that is a part of life. And like she said in her story, she didn't want to become attached to the animals, but she did. In fact,
she was
so good at working with them. Her brother was supposed to be in charge of them, and she was better at working with them. And it taught her something about life. And that's one thing about living in the country and living on a farm. There are things that you see that city kids just don't have a clue about.
Exactly.
You see all kinds of things. And
Donna, that's why I'm a vegetarian, actually, of all the things you're saying. I decided that I couldn't. I was not facing reality, and I decided, I thought if I have to kill an animal, I could never kill an animal, so I thought this is not fair to eat meat, so I stopped 35 years ago.
There is a Thomas McQuain,
his
book, his story in your book is called Taking Stock, and I loved his first sentence. The enchantment of writing is a mysterious thing that generates never-ending reflection for those who wish to understand the mild euphoria produced by the proximity of horses. Boy, can I relate to those words.
Yeah.
I can relate to them. I just said, this man in that one sentence encapsulated a feeling that is indescribable. And I'm just amazed that he was able to do it.
Yeah, I love that essay. I'm a great fan of his writing, and he's written many novels. And I'm so glad you pointed that out, because when I first read that essay, it's a reprint. He let me reprint it, and I what he said about horses and his view of life is very deep and sane, I think.
Well, I liked another thing he said. Long exposure to horses should teach tolerance. One accomplished equestrian said, you'll never be a champion until you understand and accept the limitations of each horse. Wow. What a lesson to learn.
Yeah.
That applies to everything. Really.
Yeah.
Human relationships. It's amazing.
Yeah, I think his essay is full of really deep, deep wisdom. I know the first time I read that that essay, oddly enough, it was in a It was in a Montana cookbook because he was friends with the author.
A Montana cookbook?
Yeah, it was in Big Sky Cooking, and the editors were Meredith Brokaw, Tom Brokaw's wife, and Ellen Wright. And he's friends of Tom Brokaw, so he there were wonderful essays in this cookbook, and I read that, and I thought, oh, wow. And I guess I read it about 3 or 4 years ago, and then I remembered it, and I I'm just so happy I got it for this book.
Oh, I think so. Let's talk about Kiki.
Kiki.
Kiki. Cecilia Manguera Brainerd wrote this story, and Kiki, I love the name. I just think it fit this cat.
Yes.
Tell us about Kiki.
Well, Kiki was a cat who joined the family. It was the son's girlfriend's cat, actually, and it, you know, snuck into the cat the way cats do often. They sneak into families by circuitous routes. And what I loved about that essay was that Cecilia draws a parallel of Cecilia's getting older and there are changes, and Kiki is growing older too, and the two of them are getting on. And then of course at the end Kiki dies and is buried under her favorite rose bush where she used to sleep. And Cecilia, I just saw her the other night, and Cecilia said that she has another cat. She just got a kitten, and she's off on a whole new cat now.
What I thought was so much fun in reading her story, because she lived for 17 years, and Kiki did, but she said, Kiki ceased being our pet who tried to please us. She became the master, and we, her servants, who tried hard to please her, or at least I did. This little kitten, when she first got her, within a very short period of time, assumed her position of authority, which cats are notorious for doing anyway.
Yes.
And when she did something not quite up to snuff, when she made Kiki follow some orders, then by golly, Kiki let her know, I don't love you anymore. You're not my friend. I don't want anything to do with you.
She'd go and she'd make up to Cecilia's husband. And
Just like a 5-year-old does.
Yeah.
5-year-old kid is the same thing. Bottom lip goes out. I don't love you anymore. You are not nice. In fact, I might even hate you. And just all this, the same thing. And here is this cat. Anybody that tells me that animals don't think, they're out of their minds. They're manipulators.
Right, or don't have emotions. I mean, there are people in the world who don't think animals have emotions.
And, I know.
I
know. It's absolutely amazing. Mm-hmm. Well, in the book, what story was your favorite?
Oh, that's like asking me what child is my favorite or grandchild. I love them all. What I love is that they're all so different, you know, and the voice of each author comes through and they're, you know, I can't say which is my favorite because I don't have one. I just love them all.
I understand.
And I loved working on them. You know, it was really, it was really exciting. Some I worked more on than others, what I realized too, that all these wonderful writers were so open to any kind of changes I thought should be made or edits, and they were just all a joy to work with.
The people that have this kind of empathy with other creatures definitely would be a pleasure to work with, because they each, like you said, have their own essence. Let's talk about Sal. Jacqueline Winspear.
Jacqueline Winspear.
Wrote about this wonderful dog. And she was a black lab.
Yeah.
Very special dog. Tell about Sally. She was just an incredible animal.
Well, she had, and Jacqueline is also an incredible writer. I think what's one of the most interesting things was how, well, of course, when she arrived, she was depressed, and Jacqueline was trying to, you know, she was a rescue dog, and Jackie was trying to, you know, get her to play and everything, and a very wise vet said to her, if you were depressed, would you want somebody saying to you, okay, up, let's go play, and he suggested that she just sit next to Sal and just reassure her and talk to her and love her, and eventually she'd start trusting Jacqueline. And that's exactly what she did. And what's so poignant in the essay is then at the end, she goes back and she's with Sal when Sal is put to sleep. And she's saying, you know, I'll always be here. I'll never leave you. And is reassuring her up to the very end.
Mm-hmm. And then you have this character that Billy Murnett wrote about, Molly. Molly is a creature that a lot of people would say, I couldn't have this animal around me. This animal would drive me nuts. But Molly was deeply loved.
Yes.
Tell us about Billy.
Yeah. Billy is a very good friend of mine, and it was really interesting because actually, and there's a love story going on in this book between Billy and Judith, too. It's the dog overlaps. It's her dog, and they get married. They meet. They meet at the end of her essay, and then at the beginning of his essay is that they are together, and her dog has fallen in love with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I adore both their essays. He's a very good friend of mine, and it was so... I observed the courtship, the romance, and the wedding, and all of that. And I knew Molly, the dog he writes about, and the dog just adored Billy. And it was really his wife's dog, Judith Murnett's dog, before she even met Billy. And so, yeah, they had a very powerful relationship, and it was very hard, very, very hard for Billy when Molly had to be put to sleep. But it was also right after his father had died. So originally this essay was about his father and Molly. And I said to him, and it was about 6,000 words long, too, and I said, Billy, I think your father is so interesting, it's taking away from the dog, and the essay's really about the dog. And he fortunately agreed with me, and and now it's all about Molly.
Well, I think that it just shows all of these different personalities, the stories that you have in this book, how these various animals affected the owner's life.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think, using the term owner, I think we're custodians. I think we're given that gift of being a custodian, a caretaker with an animal, because they are family. They really are family. That has been my experience. We have had a number of Scottish Terriers through the years, and each of those little Scotties are so independently unique. And when we talk about our Scotties that we have had and their personalities and their quirks or whatever it is, each of them were so unique, as it is with anyone's animals that they love. Mm-hmm. And you realize that sometimes the most cantankerous personality traits sometimes are really the ones that teach you the most, because you have to adapt. And if you're going to have a good relationship with an animal, just like with a human being, it takes patience, it takes love, it takes acceptance, it takes discipline, it takes determination, all of these qualities of character that are so valuable and so important in everyday life. Animals enable us to learn those.
Exactly. We have the year that I was working, that my horse had died, of course, that started the book. And then as I was working on the book, I lost two very elderly cats. And by the end of the book, I didn't have any pets. And I thought, well, that's it. I can't go through this ever again. And of course, 2 months later, we had a little rescue dog whose name is Nelson, and who is everything, you know, you've just said that an animal can mm-hmm. give you. You know, he's part of our family.
Mm-hmm. Well, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, I think when you really can grieve an animal, that you don't try to avoid it or walk around it or pretend or whatever, but when you really go through that grief, it opens up your heart to, you know, your heart heals and you're open to the next animal that comes and you love the next animal just as much.
Mm-hmm. Calico. Of course, we know Calico is a cat. And mm-hmm. Calico is someone that is like the vigilant warrior. And Melissa Sestaro wrote mm-hmm. this story. Tell us about Melissa and about Calico.
Oh, it's so interesting. Melissa, well, first of all, about Melissa. Melissa was in one of my writing classes about 10 years ago, and I always thought she was a good writer. And somebody showed me an essay that had been in a literary magazine 2 years ago, and I thought, oh, it was about Melissa's mother, and it had a scene with the kittens, that amazing scene with the kittens in the barn. And I said, and I wrote her an email, and I said, if you could write about one cat and, you know, write me an essay, I think it would work in this book. And she wrote this essay that just, I think is quite wonderful. It's about the cat who, her mother kept leaving them, and she felt that she was really mothered by this cat. The cat did not leave her, and the cat was always with her. And it's, mm-hmm. I think it's a very poignant essay.
Well,
so there again, it's got a different, you know, the topic, it's about the cat, but it's also about, you know, the need to be mothered.
Mm-hmm. 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 I think that it's so true, too. There was such an empathy between her and this cat, and the cat actually saved her life.
Yes,
she starts off with, in the story, the cat awakened her to the fact that there was a fire that had started that was just like 12 inches away from her.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And he saved her life.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's an amazing thing. And of course, every once in a while on television, or you'll hear someone talk about how their dog, their cat, their pig, or whatever has awakened them and saved mm-hmm. their life and got the whole family out of the house.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
This is something Calico was so special to her mm-hmm. because of this phenomenal connection. And she got her when she was just before she entered into puberty. And there's all of
yes.
this that goes into the story, the
yes,
relationship
yes.
of animal to her. And I just think it's an incredible story. Now, Barbara, I know we're just about out of time. This book, Cherished, it's mm-hmm. 21 writers who have written about the animals they've loved and that they've lost, they've passed away.
Yes.
But each and every story touches the heart. Now, you have a website, BarbaraAbercrombie.com.
Right.
You are a professional teacher for writing. So there's mm-hmm. so much that's in your website that people can explore. And it's Barbara, A-B-E-R-C-R-O-M-B-I-E.
Right.
What would you like to leave my listeners with in the way of a thought?
What would I like? I guess I said it really before, of the idea of how you do find yourself you can be in such grief and such you know, sadness, and I think a creative act like doing a book or maybe a painting or whatever can pull us out and bring us around to a sense of joy, and I guess joy is the word.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I guess
not
that's my
joy.
Final word, Donna.
Uh-huh. But it's not just joy. It's an awareness that we're all connected, that everything
exactly.
in life has its own persona, everything in life has a gift to give us. And the animals mm-hmm. that we bring into our lives bring not just one gift, they're present.
Right.
They bring the essence of who they are as living parts of this experience we call life. And I just think the stories are so precious that you have in here. And I think that the wisdom that comes with so much of it, the understanding, it'd be a great book for a reading group. People wanted to comment or talk because the stories, the essays, as you described them, are of such a nature. They're great.
Yeah, I'm so glad you said that because, yes, we're giving a bunch of books to an animal charity, a fundraiser, in a couple of weeks, and ten copies are coming together, so we're hoping some book club will take it. I would love that. I would be very interested
in that.
Oh, it
would be great. This would even be good if someone had students in high school, junior high, even elementary school. These stories are really wonderful to share, and it gives an awareness. Barbara Abercrombie has been my guest. Go to barbaraabercrombie.com. You'll find out more information about these very, very special stories, this wonderful book, Cherished, that I think you would like to add to your library. Barbara, thank you for being my guest today. This is Donna Sebo. We are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature, however, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
Hello and welcome back. This is Donna Sebo. Telephone lines are now open. If you'd like to call in and chat with me, let me light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. That's fabulous. Do it at 888-815-9756. All I need is your first name or your initial, and then I will tell you what I perceive. Of course, I always like to know where you're calling in from, too. 888-815-9756. Okay, who's coming on tomorrow is Losing Control, Finding Serenity with Daniel A. Miller. And then on Thursday, my guest, Donald Vandermart, was not able to make it. I got a call from his agent today, and they said they're going to have to reschedule. So he's going to be on with us next month, but he has a business engagement in New York, and it's just not going to be possible because of the time difference with meetings to be able to be on the show. So we're going to have perhaps a surprise guest on Thursday. And then on Friday, we're going to be talking about a topic that's in the news frequently. What is it? Bullying. Yes. We're going to be talking with Joe. His book is called Yubby. This is about what his life was like being bullied, and what he's doing as an adult to deal with this issue and helping young people handle it in a proper way. So we've got a real good set of shows coming up. One of them's going to be a surprise, but just keep it in mind. And again, if you ever want to know what's coming up on the show, come right in to where you are right here on the website, and you push the little button by the Donna Sebo Show that says Show Information, and you'll have a listing of all of the details regarding the upcoming guests. And that is there for your reading pleasure. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz, 888-815-9756. I have to tell you, even though I did not have very much on my calendar of things to do besides the daily radio show and meeting with clients and some other things, I found that, my goodness, all kinds of little items are coming my way, so I'll be making those announcements about appearances, where I'm going to be, and so on and so forth. It's really, really a lot of fun when life all of a sudden floods you with opportunities that you didn't think were going to be there for you. I wanted to share with you a statement, and it was said by Patrick Henry. No free government or the blessings of liberty can be preserved to any people but by a firm adherence to justice, moderation, temperance, frugality, and virtue, and by a frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. A frequent recurrence to fundamental principles. I was having a discussion with someone, and for those of you that are regular listeners, you know I don't get into politics or religion on this show. But when you talk with people from different parts of the world, you listen to the news, you find that there's a lot of upheaval going on. Why? Because many old patterns are dying. And they are in the throes of the death knell. And there is a real desire to have things change. Well, if you study history, you'll find that the history of humanity, I don't care where you go on this planet, goes through this. There has to be upheaval before resolution is going to be done. And it is required. It's sort of like doing spring cleaning. You have to open up the windows, get out the soap and water, and scrub. Maybe even do a pressure wash. The only way you can really make change or to deal with that which is no longer suitable is by really getting down to the bare structure, the bare bones of what needs to be dealt with. Don't just look at the symptoms and try to put Band-Aids on it, but really get down to the core cause of the disorder that applies on all levels of life, mentally, physically, emotionally, spiritually. So when we get down to the core cause, if something is rotten, if it is wrong, if it has to be cleaned up, cleaned out, that's what you do. And sometimes you have to use straight Clorox for a disinfectant. Now that's a figurative way of giving a description, but you have to really be willing to clean things up. And if you'll pay attention to what's going on, that's happening on so many levels. Now, sometimes as people, we feel like we don't have a lot of choice, but we do. And where you start is with yourself. You start right where you are, right in your own space, saying, I'm going to make sure I do everything I can to clean up my act, and then I'll take care of whatever else may come my way. This is so important to be aware of. I'll never forget many years ago listening to a minister that I had a great deal of respect for. His name was Reverend Humble. And he said it took him a long time, and he was a very mature man when I knew him. He said it took him a long time to realize that, contrary to what his mother said about eating everything on his plate, people in China were starving. He said, I didn't know anybody in China. He said, I realized I had to learn how to take care of where I was, live in the moment, be present with who I was. And if I didn't like what was going on, I had to initiate the action to make the change. And I think that that is so important for us to be mindful of. When we wake up and realize that we have dominion over our personal space, We may not be able to control external things, but we do have dominion over our own space. We then give ourselves the power, that power of individuality, that we can merge and mesh with others and thereby enable ourselves to feel like we are going to be able to make this world a better place. And you've heard me say it before, and I'll say it again. One of the joys that I have in doing this program is often recognizing people that are able to do exactly that. And I'm going to be sharing a story about one of those individuals in the program today. But I did want to mention again to you, if you want to give me a buzz, the number is 888-815-9756, and I'll just be more than delighted to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. So toll-free number worldwide, 888-815-9756. How many of you, just like me, are amazed at how fast a day will go by? It seems as if you can get up in the morning, you have one thing right after the other that just goes on, and before you know it, you blink 9, 10 o'clock at night, and you go, where did the day go? You've been busy from the moment that you've gotten up until you're putting your head down to rest. Well, one thing that is coming out more and more in publications regarding health and balance for life, anything that's written about it, they're saying, slow down. Slow down. And if you're a professional person, you may say, slow down? You've got to be kidding. How can I slow down? Do you realize I only have so many hours in the day? Da-da-da-da-da-da. However, what they are discovering is trying to multitask, and Lord knows we women really try to do that over time, multitask, we actually are not all that effective in what we get done. And when we can take a deep breath and we can sort of slow down our intensity, we actually become more efficient. And many times, we become so much more efficient that we're much more effective in whatever we're doing. What's the one thing we hate to do? Housework. Oh, who likes to clean floors, toilets, mirrors? Get dust bunnies out from underneath. I mean, this isn't something that we look forward to because it's a never-ending job. You'll be old and gray, and they still have the same amount of dust bunnies that come up and keep you company no matter where you are. Well, when you can relax with what you're doing, not put yourself under a lot of stress, you'll find those tasks are done a lot more efficiently and effectively. Delegating it to someone else is also a good idea. But what about communication? Have you ever encountered someone that when they're speaking, they're talking at such a fast rate of speed that you wonder if you're ever going to be able to understand what they're really saying? Well, what they have found with people that are doing presentations, teachers, anyone that is wanting to be effective with their communication, slow down your speech. It doesn't mean you go into a real slow monotone. No, you don't do that. But speakers that are a little bit more slow in their communication and taking pauses are quite often, they found in research, more knowledgeable about what they're discussing with you. And you know why? When people are talking extremely fast, there is something in the human being that will say, this person is talking so fast. I wonder if they're hiding something. When people talk thoughtfully and communicate effectively, they are perceived by their listeners as having more thought about what they're trying to share. Gives you something to consider, doesn't it? And what about driving fast? How many of you have been on a freeway? I have, where you have someone that's zipping around you. They easily could cause an accident because they're in such a hurry. And they're hitting that accelerator, and it's almost funny when you find yourself driving up next to them and they haven't reached any place faster than you did. Take your time when you're driving. Don't get anxious. Take a deep breath. This is something that I think so many people of wisdom have tried to express to others. that when you have this easygoing pace, doesn't mean you're lazy, you're getting things done. There's a flow. And all of us can relate to that, about how we are able to get things done. There's just this flow that occurs, and before you know it, wow, everything's in order. And when we stress ourselves out to the max, usually, I don't know about you, by golly, I make so many mistakes in whatever I'm doing, it's unbelievable. And if I mindfully change my set of thinking and action, I actually get more done. It's amazing. Well, we're taking a break here. When we come back, I have got a wonderful story about a grandma. That's right. And how she handled a situation in her family. When we come back, a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and maybe some more. Oh, and I've got something here that a listener and a reader of my newsletter shared, and I thought I would pass it along to you as well. It's about onions. Say, okay, we're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment. Don't go away.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604 or outside of Pierce County, 800-872-8852.
Hi, this is Donna. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. 888-815-9756. I had to chuckle at a short story that Corinne Stevens of Winnipeg, Canada, shared. She said, when a squirrel slipped into my house, I did the logical thing. I panicked. I called my father. How do you get a squirrel out of the basement? I yelled. Dad advised me to leave a trail of peanut butter and crackers from the basement to the outside. It worked. The squirrel ate his way out of the house. Unfortunately, he passed another squirrel eating his way in. Oh, my goodness. They are so intelligent, those squirrels are. I couldn't pass that one up. That's cute. Okay, you are getting ready for a summer picnic. You have got your egg salad. You've got all kinds of good things. And we're always concerned when we're going to be taking food out, either to a potluck or something like this, that there could be food poisoning. And believe me, I've experienced food poisoning, and it's not fun. But a listener sent me some information, and regrettably, I don't have the listener's name, but I want to thank you for sending it. That lots of times we have stomach problems, we don't know what to blame for having them after we've eaten something. And they said, maybe it's the onions. Well, I have never, ever heard anything about onions being a problem for digestion or anything else. However, this is some fascinating information she sent me. She said, onions absorb bacteria, and it's the reason they're so good at preventing us from getting colds and flus, and it's the very reason we should not eat an onion that's been sitting for a time after it's been cut open. Leftover onions can be poisonous. She She said that she had the wonderful privilege of touring Mullins Food Products, their makers of mayonnaise. She said this is a humongous facility, and it's owned by 11 brothers and sisters in the Mullins family. And she said she had a friend, Jean, who is the CEO of the company, and people were talking about food poisoning, and she decided she was going to share what she had learned from a chemist. Now, the guy, she said, that gave us our tour at Mullins, his name is Ed, and he's one of the brothers, he's a chemistry expert and is involved in developing most of the sauce formula. He even developed the sauce formula for McDonald's. And she said, keep in mind that Ed is a food chemistry whiz. So during the tour, someone asked if we really needed to worry about mayonnaise. When I was a little girl, that's what they always said caused food poisoning. She said, people are always worried that mayonnaise is going to spoil, and Ed's answer wasn't at all what they expected. Mayo is completely safe. All commercially made mayonnaise is completely safe. He said it doesn't even have to be refrigerated, and that was a big surprise to me. There's no harm in refrigerating it, but it's not really necessary. He said that the pH in mayonnaise is set at a point that bacteria could not survive in its environment. He then talked about the picnic that everybody always enjoys with a bowl of potato salad sitting on the table and how everybody blames the mayonnaise when someone gets sick. Ed said, when food poisoning is reported, the first thing officials look for when the victim last ate are onions. And where were the onions in the food? Was it in the potato salad? And this fellow Ed said, it's not the mayonnaise as long as it's not homemade mayo that spoils in the outdoors. It probably is the onions, and if not the onions, it's potatoes. And this is what he said. Onions are a huge magnet for bacteria, especially uncooked. You should never plan to keep a portion of a sliced onion. He says it's not even safe if you put it in a Ziploc bag and put it in your refrigerator. It's already contaminated enough just by being cut open and out for a bit, and that can be a danger. Watch out for the onions that you put in your hot dogs at the baseball park. He said, if you take a leftover onion and cook it like crazy, you'll be fine. But if you take the raw leftover onion and put it on your sandwich, you're asking for some trouble, perhaps. Onions and moist potato in a potato salad attract and grow bacteria faster than any commercial mayonnaise and even will begin to break down. Dogs should never, ever be fed onions. Their stomachs cannot metabolize them. And he said also, remember, it's dangerous to cut an onion and try to use it to cook the next day. It becomes highly toxic for even a single night and creates a bacteria, which is extremely toxic, which can cause adverse stomach infections because of excess bile secretions and even food poisoning. Who would have even considered that? In a million years, I wouldn't have. Never would have thought of onions. Potatoes, maybe, but never onions. I'm a good old-fashioned Italian girl and just isn't in my psyche. We have a lot of young families that are involved in the military environment, and a lot of young women are in the military, and there are 4 million grandparents in America that are raising their grandchildren today, while many of the young men and women are fighting overseas. And Debbie Nichols is a grandma who ended up taking care of her two granddaughters when her daughter was deployed overseas. And this was quite a challenge for these little girls because one was 10, her name was Ivy, and then there was a 6-year-old whose name was Bailey. And Debbie said, well, I'm going to fix up the rooms in my house. Each of the girls will have their own room. And the girls took to it very, very nicely. But they were very concerned because they were going to be separated from their mom. Well, Debbie knew that with her daughter being in the Air Force, that one day she was going to be called into action. And sure enough, that day came when she called her mom and said, I'm being deployed to Afghanistan. I really need you and Dad to take care of my girls. Well, she said, all right. So she went, got her granddaughters, and said, we're going to go home and you're going to be fine. And when your mom comes back, then everything's going to be back to normal. Well, how would you have felt if one of these little girls, let's say you were Debbie and you were driving these children to your home, knowing that your grandchildren were going to be in your custody and care for a while, what would you feel if one of them turned to you and asked you a question that Debbie was asked? The question was, Grandma, should I call you Mommy now? Well, how do you think you'd respond? Of course, Debbie, all she had to say is, no, sweetie, I'm your grandma. I'm not your mommy. Your mommy's going to be coming home. Now, I know we're just about out of time here. I'll have to finish this story tomorrow. But it's a heartwarming one, and I think you'll enjoy hearing the rest of it tomorrow. This is Donna Sebo. Remember, always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. Thank you so much for being with me today. Wherever you are, whatever you do, take a moment, relax, take a deep breath. You're going to get a lot more done today than you ever dreamed, and you're going to have fun at it, too. Talk to you tomorrow, same time, same place. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.